What's going on, everybody? Welcome in. It's the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase, as always, joining you on this Thursday edition of the show. Alongside, as always, my co-host, Gino Camilleri. We did a show on Tuesday about the winners and losers of the NFL draft, so we recommend go check that out on the podcast platforms that you're subscribed to the show or on LockedOnEagles.com. We did winners and losers of the NFL draft, and then on Monday, I did just a final takeaways podcast from the draft. We'll have more coverage about, today we're going to get into it as well. We're going to, for today, kind of talk about what Eagles players were hurt and helped the most by the 2019 draft class. So that's what we're going to get into. We're planning on next week starting up a series where we get a beat writer from each school that the Eagles drafted a player from that respective college, and we'll kind of get into their perspective of that prospect. So hopefully we'll get some guys on from Penn State, from Stanford, for Arcega Whiteside, and for Miles Sanders. And of course, I can't forget about the first-round pick, Andre Dillard, so somebody from Washington State. So keep an eye out for that. But kind of the quiet time of the offseason right now, kind of taking a deep breath as, you know, the whole build-up with the combine and then free agency, and it's mock draft season right after that, and then, Of course, the draft. So it's the quiet season now, but that's, we want to kind of put a final cap on the draft with these next couple weeks of podcasting. And then we got, OTA starts in June, right?
Yes, sir. We're getting close.
Before you know it, there's going to be the six-man battle royale at corner and training camp. The preseason will start.
I'm super excited for this camp.
Yeah, and then the whole regular season starts, and we do it all over again with a pretty loaded 2019 roster. A lot of talent across the board on both sides of the football. But yeah, we're going to get into now the player perspective here when it comes to the 2019 draft. Players that were already on the roster, who was helped and who was hurt. And with this first segment, me and Gina are going to start with who was hurt. And Gina, I think we would both agree that Halipuli Vaivai-Tai is probably one of the biggest losers, considering They already drafted Mailata, and now they bring in Dillard in the first round. The writing is on the wall, I think, for Big V.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I was listening to, once again, Adam Kaplan's podcast, and he only puts information on the podcast. Like, he makes it known that he will not tweet out any Eagles inside information. You have to listen to the podcast. Very good marketing plan to get people to go and listen. And definitely I listen because I like to hear all the background stories. I think the background to how things occur in the NFL is so much more entertaining than what you see up front. Like, on Sunday, like how they get to that point of compiling the roster is so much more entertaining than the actual games. Yes, the actual games are, of course, fun, but like, you can go through so many of these hypotheticals that we've gone through in X, Y, and Z, and it's just very entertaining. But he was saying that the Eagles think that, well, in his opinion, he thinks that Big V could be a guard, but they also said that the Eagles might be open to the idea of Jordan Mailata playing guard. So if Big V wanted to move anywhere, they're definitely considering all other options before they put Big V into the game.
Well, and we even brought that up on the last podcast. I even said it on Monday, too. I was thinking, and then I wanted to double check with you, how the idea of Mailata inside would work out, because they really did like how he developed in the summer, and he's someone with a whole lot of upside, much like Andre Dillard is. But with Big V too, I think that's interesting that he brought up him as a potential guard. It's cool though that there's a lot of optionality now with the offensive line. You don't have to necessarily trade Halipuli Vaivai-Tai. You can move him inside, banking on, really, he's kind of like your insurance plan, whereas, like, if Dillard doesn't, I feel like Dillard's going to pan out, and they definitely are going to bank on that. They're going to give him every opportunity, considering what they got to move up for him, giving up a fourth and a sixth. He is going to be the replacement for Jason Peters, but Big V is kind of like that, okay, if Mailata doesn't pan out, here's that, you know, second depth guy. He's someone that you could maybe consider moving inside if, eventually, say, Amalu moves around the line of scrimmage. So, but at the same time,
you can't forget about Matt Pryor, too, man.
That's
they've,
right, yeah.
They've talked him up big time. They really like him in that building.
So, Matt Pryor as well, another kind of two-way offensive lineman that can play both guard and tackle like he did it at TCU. So, if an offer does present itself, the Eagles will probably take almost anything they can get for Big V at this point. So I think definitely them taking Dillard did hurt him, because even last year, like with Mailata's promise, they still weren't putting that guy in the lineup when Jason Peters was getting hurt. So Big V was still going to see a lot of action on the field. And if they would have maybe took like an Oli Udo in the fourth, fifth round this year, that still wouldn't have really ruled anything out for Big V. But Dillard now with Mailata, it seems like he was one of the guys that were most hurt by the draft.
Yeah, 100%. We mentioned it the last episode, and the Eagles just, it's phenomenal how great they are at producing left tackles. I mean, their last two were Jason Peters and Trey Thomas, who are two of the best ever in NFL history, and let alone Eagles history.
So what's that, like a 19-year span of like two left tackles?
I think it was late 2000s.
Like early
2000s,
sure. Yeah, right when that McNabb era started kicking off. Like, it's unreal how just dominant and how secure they've been at that position, which is, you know, obviously so important.
Mm-hmm. And then you come out and you get Andre Dillard to learn behind not only Jason Peters, but Lane Johnson as well, to compete with guys like Jordan Mailata, who are going to push them not just in reps, but in the weight room as well. And they talk about Andre Dillard having to get some size on him to be able to exceed in the run game, which is his weak point. We all know that. He's very good in pass protection. They're going to push each other throughout the entire offseason between Matt Pryor, between Jordan Mailata, between Isaac Samuel, between all those guys, because this isn't just like the Cincinnati Bengals right now that had to sign somebody just to play. They have enough guys that can play on Sunday for many teams in the NFL. Like, if you're going to look at Matt Pryor or you're going to look at Jordan Mailata, Mailata might be starting on some teams if you think about it, because teams crave offensive tackle talent. You see how much teams love offensive tackle talent. Look at Titus Howard, a guy who we projected in the day two round area, goes right after like Andre Dillard, whose skill sets wildly differ, whose production wildly differ in college, but that's how hungry the NFL is for offensive tackle and offensive guard and center help. And the Eagles, frankly, now have a luxury of it once again. What has been a main concern the last couple years, we've seen offensive tackles go down and time and time again, and offensive linemen go down time and time again. You're playing in the Super Bowl with Big V as your left tackle. The more versatility you offer, the more competition that is in that room, the better it is for that Eagles team, and better it is for all of those linemen, and better it is for Carson Wentz, because you want that offensive line to produce at the highest level that they have been over the last couple years, grading out in the top tier of the NFL, to keep Carson Wentz safe. Because arguably, investing in Dillard was just adding to your portfolio that you already have invested into Carson Wentz.
Making sure that his blind side is protected for maybe another decade is one of the most important parts of the franchise. So, but at the same time, though, that does hurt Big V's prospects and future in Philadelphia. Another guy, Gino, that came to my mind, and it's someone that, for me, like, I'm glad he's still here. He's a player that I want to eventually be a long-term piece in the secondary. Obviously, most people that have listened to the show consistently throughout the past year know who I'm about to say, but I actually think he was hurt in the draft, and it's Rasul Douglas. You would think it'd be he was helped because they didn't take a cornerback, but I actually think because he wasn't traded, it hurts Rasul Douglas. He is a player to me that if this was going to be a straight open competition that had no factors of favoritism, no factors of, you know, Jim Schwartz's influence or even the front office's influence, I'm very fascinated by this secondary battle to see what the dynamic is between Jim Schwartz's preferences, the front office's preferences, and then just straight up competition, right? Because I feel like the front office is going to be pushing Sidney Jones. I feel like they like Rasul Douglas a lot more than Schwartz does. But at the same time, I think Schwartz likes Jalen Mills a whole lot more than the front office does. And then maybe even like a guy like Cravion LeBlanc, Schwartz maybe going to lean more towards those kind of players. So Rasul, while he came out and did everything he could to prove that he can be an outside starter for this team over the last final, from week 12 up until that divisional round of the playoffs, he was one of the best corners in football. Truthfully, on the field, I could see it too, especially against the run and with tackling. But I just don't know if there is a route, if there's a scenario where he sees the field, unless Jalen Mills just can't get healthy or if Ronald Darby suffers yet another serious injury, because they're never going to put him at safety. They're not going to put him inside. So basically his own, and look, they brought back Darby. They paid him almost $9 million. That guy is locked up one of the outside spots. So he essentially has to beat out Jalen Mills, Avante Maddox, Sidney Jones, for that outside spot, and I don't even know if it's going to be available, because if Mills is healthy, dude, I just cannot see Schwartz not putting 31 on the outside. So I think Rasul not getting a shot with another team, like let's say a Cleveland or an Oakland, I think that hurts him. And I love that he's still on the roster, but I don't think him still being here is going to help him if they don't give him a fair shot.
Yeah, and I think the key point in that was if they don't give him a fair chance, because just like the offensive line positions, cornerback is going to be the biggest competition. It's going to be the main attraction of training camp. One thing I'm very interested to see is how does Jim line these guys up? Does he throw Avante Maddox back at safety a couple times? Does he change all of his morals and move Jalen Mills to safety, which is something that I don't expect to happen in my lifetime?
I don't think Avante either. Like, I feel like that was almost a necessity move. And if they don't move either one of those guys to safety, like, that's just another player.
That's why I'm intrigued about it, is because did they just see that as a one-off, or do they truly think that cross-training their defensive backs will lead to, hey, potentially we do have a safety. We wanted him to come in as a corner, but he has all the skills to play safety, which we saw Avante Maddox really could get a hold on if he had some time to learn the position.
I just think, but, real quick, for me, I understand that maybe Rasul is not the perfect fit at safety. Mills even hasn't played it since LSU. They might prefer him on the outside. Even Maddox, played better on the outside at corner than any other position last year, but I still think he played well enough at safety. I just think that those guys, everyone we just mentioned, is more talented on the field. I would rather have those guys out there, even if it's not the perfect fit, compared to having Trey Sullivan out there or Andrew Sandejo. I just think those guys on the field, having Rasul Douglas's playmaking ability or Maddox, or even like having the ability, sure, you want Jalen Mills on the field, fine, but if you push him back, that can get another one of those corners on the field instead of on the bench, and I would just rather have that talent out there, even if it's not the perfect fit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think you want to phase out relying on those veteran presence at that third safety position. Was really disappointing not to come out of this draft with one of those safeties we so truly like were adoring all draft season, in Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Nasir Adderley, just Darnell Savage, the list goes on and on. But we do have guys that can step in and play those roles, and that's why I'm not overly apt to write off some movement in the secondary. I think it's open, and look, as much as Jim Schwartz may favor people, you have to realize the talent you have in that building. Like, everybody can see it, that Rasul Douglas needs to be on the field. I don't know if Jalen Mills is 100% going to be ready for training camp. I think that opens a door for him. But like you said, Lou, I do think he would have done better as a change of scenery guy. But I still think he is a guy that this organization loves. They drafted him in that double dip scenario with Sidney Jones, truly thinking that those could be your two outside guys moving forward. Okay, there's a reason they picked him there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Those are two of the guys that they're the guys I'm going to die on this hill for. And I think
Sidney Jones was my guy.
Yeah. And I think Jones, so I understand like the not straight competition being what dictates it, because if that was the case, maybe Devontae Bosby is your starting slot corner in training camp.
Right?
Like I understand.
Going back to Corey Shepard a couple years ago
before
he tore his ACL. Yeah,
exactly. So I understand not just having it be straight competition, but the people I want to give the benefit of the doubt is not the Jalen Millses. To me, it's the guys that the front office likes. It's the ones that
it's Jalen Mills' job to lose.
Yeah, no, it is. But it's, to me, I would rather have it be like, I'm more willing to give Sidney Jones the benefit of the doubt because of the upside, because you have to see if he can meet that ceiling that's higher than any of these guys. Or I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to the Rasul Douglas, who was your best corner down the stretch that helped you get into the playoffs and was locking down some legitimate receivers. Right. I mean, that just shows how far he went, the development. So I get not just having it be straight competition. At the same time, I saw Jim Schwartz last year, and I'm not trying to knock on Jim Schwartz. Like, I thought he adjusted the second half of the season tremendously. I think he listened to his players when Malcolm Jenkins told him to adjust during that Giants game. It honestly saved their season. He made a lot out of a little with how injured that defense was. But at the same time, I question his secondary decisions because I can't get out of my head Rasul Douglas rotting on the sidelines.
We don't need to bring it up anymore.
But
we are on to 2019. In the words of Bill Belichick, we're on to 2019.
I know, but it's just, I'm so bitter about it. So that I'm looking at Dexter McDougal nearly blow these games. He was part of it against Carolina, and then Jacksonville, he nearly blew that one before eventually Rasul had to come out on the field because Mills got hurt too. So anyway, I think we can really get sidetracked on the secondary because it's such a fascinating, deep, questionable future at that position, yet still promising at the same time. But I definitely think Rasul was the one that really they see as an outside corner solely, and I think a change of scenery would have been really nice for him. Is there another guy you can think of before we hit a break that was hurt by the Eagles draft?
Yeah, I'm going to just make one quick point on that cornerback position. I'm going to continue to pound it into our listeners' head because I want to change the narrative from evaluation of talent to growing your talent. Because they evaluated these players for years. They did in college, and they did since they've been in the NFL. At what point do you look your evaluators in the eye and your teachers, your coaches, that is, and say, hey, maybe you guys aren't doing the job. Like, maybe Corey Unlin isn't the guy. I just think that is a suggestion that we should think about. Because if you're going to continue to draft young players at the cornerback position, you can't continue to have turnover. You have to continue to grow and mold your guys to the positions that to the play style that you see fit. And if those guys aren't fitting in your play style, the guys evaluating the talent aren't doing their jobs either. So they need to find the middle ground on this and stop writing off corners 2 years into the position and let the guys get a chance. You have to let them on the field to get a chance. It's not a position like defensive end where you could just cycle guys in. It's like running back almost. Like, you got to get in that flow. Like, you have to learn from the receiver. Like, you have to give and take.
That's why they got better down the stretch. I mean, because they got into the rhythm, like you're saying, like Cravion LeBlanc and Rasul specifically. Those guys got better the more reps they got.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Just remember, as we go into this camp, you want to see increased development from these young corners. Because if not, it's either one, personally liable on them, or two, as a whole, the individuals that are instructing those units, i.e. Corey Unlin, and the safety coach's name is skipping my brain right now, but you have to look them in. They have to look themselves in the mirror. And frankly, moving on to the next point, as the team continues to phase out base defense, which I'm going to say not as a player, but as a whole is getting hurt right now. The team is continuing to move towards these big nickel, big dime, these sets where they're playing six and seven defensive backs. If you're going to not rely on linebackers as much, you have to put the best defensive backs on the field. And this offseason truly is going to show that, because they played base defense a quarter of the time last season. You want your best defensive backs on the field. And if you're going to keep Jalen Mills out there while you have a Rasul Douglas who performed last season, what are we doing? Like, why are we doing the same thing again? Like, if Jalen Mills starts to get burned by double moves, it's like, first time, like, shame on me, second time, shame on you, like that type of thing. Like, how many times are we going to let this happen before you push him out of the building? Because it seems like guys don't get second chances in this organization as much as you would like to see. And some guys get fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh chances when you don't want to see them get the chances, you know? So that was a little sidetracked, but all in all, they're going to play much more like sub-package defenses this season. So base defense, like, don't get hung up on worrying about that we didn't draft a linebacker, that we only have Nigel Bradham and a collection of other guys that are, quote, special teamers. This team has enough talent to get it done in sub packages. They have the guys in the building that they want. They're going to continue to add as we approach, what is it, I think the seventh or eighth, that free agents no longer count towards the comp pick formula. You're going to see them can try and bring in a couple more linebackers. But don't rely on base defense. Just get it out of your head, people. Like, it's going to continue to get hurt more and more drafts as we go along. The NFL is an evolving place, and you can't get caught up on being a Dave Gettleman and drafting guys for the 1980s NFL.
Yeah, and the sub-package thing is interesting, too, because we're talking about the corners and the secondary. Even if you don't want to move one of these guys to safety, there's still, like, packages where I can see four corners being out there and just two safety. Like, it's, again, just getting your best players on the field, and I'd rather have Avante Maddox, I'd rather have Cravion, I'd rather have Douglas, I'd rather have Sidney Jones out there than a Sendejo or a Trey Sullivan. And you mentioned, again, Jalen Mills. While you know what you have in Jalen Mills, it's not even you saw enough. You saw the development of these players. They played well. They showed the flashes that you drafted them to show. So now, to me, you got to keep – maybe Mills is the safe move and you know what you have out of him. You got to keep trying to see what you can get out of the secondary, and I think some packages really really help that. And, yeah, them not drafting a safety, them not drafting a linebacker, I think that helps the corners, and I think it actually – especially linebackers, it helps – for the people that don't really want to see a whole lot of two, three linebacker looks. I think the final guy that was not helped by the draft at all was Chris Long. It would have been even worse for him if they, you know, went in the first round and took Montez Sweat, or in the second round they took a guy. They didn't take a pass rusher until round four with Sharif Miller out of Penn State. But Chris Long even was talking about it on Twitter today. For the Eagles, he said that the Eagles should prepare as if he's not coming back, because he already talked to the organization even before they brought back Vinnie Curry and they drafted Sharif Miller and they continue to try to see what they have out of Josh Sweat. They talked, and his 2018 role is really gone. So unless there's some big-time injuries, they're going to try to get the most out of those two high-potential guys in Sweat and Miller. Vinnie Curry is going to be rotating through. Derek Barnett's going to play a whole lot more this year. And I do get it. I do get Chris Long's – I get his frustrations. He played really well in increased playing time the past couple years. But he also, on the interior, like, that kind of goes away too, because if Malik Jackson and Tim Jernigan rotating on the interior, there is less snaps for him or Graham to move inside. So I think Chris Long definitely got hurt by just really the whole offseason in general.
Yeah, I think people are unnecessarily going after Chris Long on Twitter. I've seen some people like, when are you going to sign? When are you going to sign? Like, give him a break. Like, he's at the end of his career. He's a guy that, frankly, wants to be in the right environment. And he said that when he left New England 2 seasons ago. He said the reason he came to Philadelphia was to play this exact role. And if the role is not there, you're not going to sit there. Much like a Josh Rosen situation, but the Eagles did it in a more civilized manner. If your role's not going to be there, don't keep the guy in house. Let him be happy. Be a good organization. I think the Eagles do a great job of that. But yeah, I mean, drafting Sharif Miller kind of put the writing on the wall for Chris Long. Bringing back Vinnie Curry, same exact thing. You got your four that you're going to rotate there along with Josh Sweat. I think you have a nice young core of guys that you can continue to develop along with your veterans and Brandon Graham. And you can kind of count Derek Barnett as a veteran at this point along with Vinnie Curry. I think they have a good young rotation there, especially at the defensive tackle position as well. But Chris Long, would it be nice to get him back in-house when he did play such a majority of this, a large majority of the snaps in 2019? I think so, but if the guy's not going to be happy, it's not a great thing to have guys in your building that aren't happy, that are going to bring down the tone of the team, which I don't think Chris Long would. He's a very locker room friendly guy. But at the same time, once that retirement word creeps into your mind, it's the old adage goes, once it's there, it's not going to go away. So who would you rather have? Some young guns that are going to go out there, give it their all every snap, try to prove themselves, try to get their second contract, or Chris Long, who's really on his way out and should have retired 2 years ago after last season after they won the Super Bowl, in my opinion. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I think Chris Long is always going to be remembered as one of the fan favorites of Philadelphia. And if he doesn't come back, we have to applaud him for everything that he did in the Super Bowl run, coming here, getting revenge on his old team, and then everything he did last season, because he had some memorable moments. You're going to look back on these teams and see some highlights and see a lot of Chris Long causing a lot of havoc, a lot of forced fumbles. He's in that Dwight Freeney role right now. He just needs to find the right environment, and I sadly don't think it's in Philadelphia.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with – I know you have to find that balance with how good they are right now, how set up they are for contention. You also have to find that balance of – sticking with, okay, we trusted the development of this player, we trusted our scouting department, we took this player, so now we need to give them the benefit. We need to see this through these draft picks and let them start getting on the field and seeing if they can develop. So it's that finding that balance between, obviously, getting a guy like Chris Long right now is going to help your pass rush, but at the same time, I feel like with Miller and Sweat, you got to give those guys an opportunity to show some of the flashes they did at Penn State and Florida State. Let's take a quick break here on Locked On Eagles. When we come back, who was helped by the draft from a player perspective? That's coming up right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. It's Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri on this Thursday edition of the podcast. So we got into what Eagles players were hurt by the 2019 draft class. Now, who was helped? And Gino, I think at safety, which we were talking about secondary a lot with Rasul Douglas, is someone I thought was hurt by not getting moved from the Eagles. I think Rodney McLeod has really helped. I know the contract language right now kind of has him done after this season, but considering they didn't bring in a safety and maybe the unwillingness to move one of these corners to safety full-time, if McLeod still wants to play, you know, more than 1 year in Philadelphia, depending on what they do next year, I think there is a much higher probability that he is here past 2019 after they didn't take your boy Nazir or Chauncey Gardner-Johnson or any of these guys in the draft.
Yeah, like we said at the defensive end position, where they have a young stable of defensive ends that they can potentially mold into being that second guy next to Derek Barnett. Frankly, the safety position just doesn't have anything, and Rodney McLeod must be a happy man after seeing the draft class, because the writing was on the wall for him that he was basically out the door after this year. But I think it opens the door to potentially bringing him back, much like they did with Tim Jernigan. I'm expecting him to have another good season before, like he did in 2017, and how he was before he got hurt, which would potentially raise his value. But he is a very vital part of this team. You saw how much it hurt them when he went out last season. When you had to rely on Corey Grimm to get sideline to sideline, it just wasn't happening. Fans were kind of down on Rodney McLeod coming out of the 2017 season into 2018 for I don't know what reason. I kind of was myself. I was kind of thinking that he was the issue to the defense, but you truly saw how important he was when he wasn't there. And yeah, I think he's an absolute winner out of this class. And I think you might see him on the 2020 Eagles come that time.
Yeah, he's an underrated piece, I honestly think, in defense. I know he kind of got a bad rap, especially in 2016 with that whole effort play or lack thereof against, what was it, Cincinnati. So McLeod kind of had a bad rap for a little bit in 2016, but he's just underrated, probably because Malcolm Jenkins gets so much attention back there for moving around the defense. But McLeod really kind of was that bread and butter when Malcolm Jenkins had to come down. It was good to know you had him back there, even though Corey Grimm was also there when he got hurt in that Colts game last year. Then it was, okay, Malcolm Jenkins still going to roam the field. Now you got a rookie corner at safety and Corey Grimm. So I think getting McLeod back, and especially now that they didn't draft anyone, I think bodes well for his future here if he wants to be an Eagle. Josh Sweat, do you agree? I think Chris Long was hurt by the draft. I think because they didn't take, I think Sharif Miller right now is the more promising player between him and Sweat, but them not taking a guy like in the first or second round, that really opens the door where I could easily see Sweat beating out Miller for that fourth and final rotation spot on the edge.
Yeah, I still think Sweat has the potential to be a very good third defensive end. He has everything you want physically out of a defensive end. He really didn't play in the correct system at Florida State, much like Timmy Jernigan didn't play in the correct system in Baltimore. So they both had to adapt. You saw that Timmy Jernigan kind of got into his own easier than a guy like Josh Sweat did, obviously because he's been in the NFL a couple years. But now that it's Josh's second year, he's going to get stronger this offseason. That's just how it goes. I mean, hopefully you're crossing your fingers. He's going to have a year under his belt, and they're going to give him the opportunity to get on the field. He's not going to be a healthy scratch like he was much of the time last season. That's going to be Sharif Miller now. He absolutely has everything it takes to be a very important piece in a rotation. You want to see what you can get out of him in the run game. You want to see if he can add more in the pass rush game this year, but physical tool sets, that's your guy. He's the guy. He's got the wingspan. He could itch his ankles standing up. His arms are a mile long. He's built like an absolute brick house.
He looks like Jadeveon Clowney, really.
Yeah, he really does. Like, he's built like if you molded somebody out of marble, like, that's Josh Sweat. Like, guy's absolutely chiseled. Hell of a frame. Todd McShay, I remember when I was listening to the ESPN draft coverage last year, he said that he thought Josh Sweat could be the steal of the draft for every reason I just mentioned, because he was underutilized at Florida State in a position that wasn't natural to him. And I think being in that rotational edge position in year two, you should definitely see an increased production from him, and he could be the guy in year three and year four, and you're totally saying, like, we needed a gem out of one of these defensive ends, and I think he's that guy because he has everything physically it takes. And hopefully he can translate to the field what you want out of him. And I think he's in a perfect situation to really grow in a rotational edge position this season and evolve into a true, like, three-down edge rusher come 2020, 2021.
I'm excited to see the competition between him and Miller, because I really think that's going to be, like, that final spot for who they activate on game day at defensive end. I think Sweat's going to be the favorite right now, but at the same time, like, it's going to be really fun to see Sharif Miller and Josh Sweat go at it in the summer. And it's just both guys, they don't have that. Like in the first round, you expect, okay, we took Brian Burns. This guy's going to play right away, and he's going to have a big role. With Sweat and Miller, it's like both of them, you could see, like Sweat was last year, don't have a really substantive role in the defense. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised at all with the amount of upside that both guys offer if either one just flashed this year and kind of just really started that big leap coming from a fourth-round pick, which both guys were in the past two drafts. And then the final guy, Gino, before we take our final break, I mean, Carson Wentz, this is a player, if you thought the Eagles weren't committed to him, look, not only just adding the fifth-year option, knowing that's just the proof that they plan on bringing this guy in Philadelphia long-term for probably the rest of his career as long as he's healthy. But then they go out, and in a class where they talked about the defensive line specifically, they go out and get his left tackle of the future, they get him his running back of the future, and they get him potentially his next Alshon Jeffrey whenever DeSean Jackson moves on, whenever Nelson Agholor moves on, or Alshon. You got J.J. Arcega-Whiteside waiting in the wings. Carson Wentz, it's so exciting. Like, I don't even know. He's got Ertz is his favorite target, but it's going to be fun to see like how the stats line up, like who's the favorite guy for Wentz to go to. He has so many options, even in the backfield now with, you know, Sanders, Howard, and Clement. Carson Wentz was one of the biggest winners, not only for the Eagles this year, but in the entire NFL.
Totally. And you think this team had any debate of Nick Foles and Carson Wentz this offseason?
Not for a second.
Not for a single second. They went in here and said, man, there's guys like Miles Sanders and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside who we think could be the cherry on top to truly get to a Doug Peterson / Carson Wentz offense. You now have, which Carson has not had in his entirety of being the quarterback of the Eagles, a guy that you could put it in his hands, does have to work out some fumble concerns, but is going to be your true number one running back. Maybe not this year. He's definitely going to be part of the committee this year, but after the season, Jordan Howard's a free agent. After the season, Corey Clement, you don't know if he's going to be back. After the season, you don't know if Wendell Smallwood or Josh Adams are even going to make the team. This is the perfect draft to put the final topping on the sundae for Carson Wentz to grow with young talent around him. How many times have I said it, Lou, that I wanted a guy that Carson Wentz can mold to be, quote, the guy? And I 100% think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside will soon become one of his best friends, along with Alshon, who's any quarterback's best friend, along with Zach Ertz, who would be any quarterback's best friend, and along with Dallas Goedert, who would be any quarterback's best friend. Carson Wentz is in the perfect offensive situation, and he has everything he needs to excel this year. You have a running back that on third and short, you could put it in his hands, dump it off to him, get the couple of yards you need. You're in the red zone. You have four targets over 6'3". They have it, man. Like, this is one of the most skilled offenses we've seen in Philadelphia and in the NFL in a long, long time. And I frankly cannot wait to see what they do on Sundays.
You mentioned that this is one of the most talented offenses the Eagles have ever had. When we come back, when we wrap up the show, I want to get into that. I want to talk about is there any other offenses in Eagles history that come close to what this 2019 offense looks like on paper? That's coming up next, right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, we're wrapping up the show, guys. Welcome back. It's Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. So we talked about Carson Wentz before we took our final break, being one of the biggest winners, not only for the Eagles after this 2019 draft, but of the entire NFL. He literally, like Gino said, has everything he wants. If he needs the big targets on the outside, he's got Whiteside, and he's got Alshon, and he's got the speedsters and DeSean and Agholor, and the do-it-all kind of players like Miles Sanders as well, the bruiser and Jordan Howard, the great tight ends and Zach Ertz and Goddard. This is just the most diverse, deep, the most talented offense that I can remember that the Eagles have ever had. Is there a year, Gino, that comes to your head where it was even close to this year's offense?
Yeah, obviously, I can't personally speak on the years of, like, Randall Cunningham and Mike Quick and the whole, like, Carmichael, that whole offense. I'm sure it was absolutely electric to see. I wish I could see it with my own eyes. Randall Cunningham, in this NFL, probably would have been an absolute stud.
Yeah, 100%.
He was way beyond his year, or way ahead of his time. But, man, this offense is making me think back to that Mike Vick, that DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, LeSean McCoy, Monday Night Football against the Redskins, toss it down the field on the first play of the game. We haven't even mentioned DeSean Jackson's name in this conversation. Like, this is the first time it came up that he's currently on this Philadelphia Eagles team, which we think is the best offense they've had in a long time, which prior was the last time that DeSean Jackson was on the team. Like, that year
really
when
cool.
They had Maclin, DeSean, and LeSean all at the height of their careers, it was just absolutely electric to watch. Too bad they didn't have a franchise quarterback at that time. It would have been nice if, like, McNabb, that was McNabb's, like, prime years, that they actually got him some weapons other than Todd Pinkston. But it was just, like, a kind of thing, like, their offense was great when their defense was down. They didn't have the quarterback, but still, they were electric. You can think back to how many times DeSean Jackson just made you jump out of your seat. How many times Jeremy Maclin, like, had remarkable catches on the sideline. How many times LeSean McCoy, the snowball, made people jump out of their seat, too. Like, that was one of the most prolific offenses in football at the time. And they didn't even have a franchise quarterback. Just think about that.
From 2009 up until, like, 2014, they were loaded. It's funny, DeSean Jackson's kind of been on both, like, both eras of this Eagles team when it comes to the offenses. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, from 2010, that comeback player of the year season for Vic, up until 2013 when Chip Kelly came in, that explosive four, that group of four with DeSean, Vic, McCoy, and Maclin, that's one of the closest. Even you mentioned, like, McNabb. That 2009 team was really the start of it.
Yeah,
because it was McNabb's. It was McNabb's final year, and it's funny you say, like, they had the defense, but they didn't have the weapons. Then they had the weapons, but they didn't have the defense. It was part of why Dallas blew them out in that wild card game. But it was McNabb when they went 11-5 that year. It was McNabb. It was a rookie Maclin and McCoy, but still super effective. DeSean Jackson, even Brent Celek at the time, we forget. Brent Celek was a receiving tight end back then, and they still had Brian Westbrook too in his final year with the Eagles. So that 4 year, 5 year span was really, really talented. Especially, like, if 2013, if Maclin didn't tear his ACL that year in Chip Kelly's new offense, especially with how good Nick Foles was, or in 2014, like, if you don't cut DeSean Jackson, that 2014 offense would have had DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin. Remember, both guys had career numbers with Chip Kelly's offense. You have McCoy, you have Zach Ertz, right? And you have Darren Sproles.
Yes, sir.
I mean, you add Sproles to that mix, too, in 2014. It was just, oh, man. I mean, that team, they went 10-6, and again, it was a lot because they didn't have the defense. But those are the main ones I'm thinking, really, from, like, 2008 to 2014 before Chip tore it all apart. Those were the ones that really stuck in my head because, like you said, I mean, it was Todd Pinkston, James Thrash. I mean, McNabb didn't have anything.
Besides the T.O. year. Like, the T.O. year was just an enigma. That was super electric.
Yeah, McNabb, T.O., and Westbrook was up there. I even wrote down 2004. 2017, like, the Super Bowl year, obviously. Ertz, Aguilar. Remember, that was breakout year, Aguilar. Alshon Jeffrey, an MVP Wentz, an MVP Nick Foles. You had also that trio of running backs who combined for almost 300 yards from scrimmage in the Super Bowl with Blount, Ajayi, and Clement. Like, we got to, like, the past couple of years, too, they've been almost as loaded. The difference now is you replace Torrey Smith and Golden Tate with the best deep threat ever in DeSean Jackson. You replace Trey Burton with Dallas Goedert, which is, to me, a significant
upgrade.
It's
crazy that they just keep upgrading at positions which you didn't think could get better.
And now you add the depth with Arcega Whiteside, and you have a Miles Sanders, who, to me, is more talented. Like, I love Jay Ajayi. I'm going to miss that guy. But Miles Sanders is more talented than any of the running backs they've had, really, probably since LeSean McCoy. So those are some of the offenses that come to my head. But, yeah, 2019, though, on paper, it's like 6, 7, 8 deep if Corey Clement bounces back, too, this year. It is, again, Carson Wentz should put up, like, 5,000 passing yards. I want 40 touchdowns. I think this is like an air raid. I think this offense could be elite this year.
I 100% think that, and it just, you got to give Howie Roseman his credit. Like, we thought that 2017 offense could be the best that it was, best one that we ever saw. We thought 2018 could be even better, and now we're sitting here 2019 with, on paper, one of the most deep offenses that this team, this franchise, the NFL has even seen. Because you look around right now, like, some of these teams, the offenses that they're going to field this year, like Washington is going to be poor. The Giants are going to be poor. The Jets are going to be okay. Like, they would die to have a guy like Dallas Goedert. They would die to have a guy like Nelson Agholor. And we just have the luxury of having them all. It's just a perfect storm. And hopefully it's not like the 2013 Dream Team year. I think this team has it all together. I think they have high character guys in the locker room. You have a more aged DeSean Jackson who's more focused on football. Carson Wentz wants retribution against the entire NFL.
Part two.
This is
going to
be Wentz retribution 2.0, like you said, Lou.
Yeah, 100%. We're getting towards that time, and it's cool. I mean, we talk about how talented this offense is. I mean, DeSean Jackson was your consensus number one wide receiver for, what, 5 years, from 2008 mm-hmm. up until 2013, and now he might be your fourth, fifth passing option, which is incredible. Right. So it just shows that this offense is built to put up 40 on you every single game, especially if you're the Giants and you're going to try to put Alec Ogletree on Zach Ertz. So I think that's a good way to wrap up the show.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Everyone, for tuning in to today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't already. If you could leave us a rate and review, we'd appreciate it. And of course, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiaseLOE, and at Gino_LOE. For my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase, signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.